Maybe you shop at a store with co-op in the name. People gathering their resources together in cooperative ventures allows them to increase their buying and bargaining power, with plenty of other benefits to be had. And a report out recently suggests there could be far more uses for cooperative ventures in the state of California. Project Equity, the California Center for Cooperative Development, and the Sustainable Economies Law Center joined forces on the report, which lays out the benefits of people joining co-ops for workplaces, for housing, and for childcare. Let's explore some of the ideas here. Hillary Abel is co-founder and chief policy and impact officer at Project Equity and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Hillary, welcome.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
So give us a sketch, if you would, about what Project Equity is all about.
Project Equity is a national nonprofit organization based in Oakland, California, and our mission is to foster economic resiliency in low-income communities. And we do that through promoting employee ownership. And we work a lot with worker cooperatives, which is a field that I have about 2 decades of experience in. And our focus is on engaging stakeholders from the general public to the state, local, and federal government, capital providers, the business services ecosystem, everyone that we can to support the transition of small and medium-sized enterprises to worker cooperatives and other forms of employee-owned companies.
How common or not are co-ops in California?
They're quite common in California. They have a long history going back to the 1800s. But a lot of people don't know how common they are. And the co-ops that we're talking about in our report, worker co-ops, housing cooperatives, and childcare co-ops, are nowhere near as common as we'd like them to be. What you do see a lot of in California and throughout the country are credit unions, for example, agricultural co-ops, and consumer cooperatives. And there's about 40,000 cooperatives total in the United States.
I'm glad you mentioned credit unions, because there are some people who may be part of a co-op and not realize it, and that might be the most obvious example.
I think it is.
Mm-hmm. California is often an early adopter in many things. I mean, are co-ops somewhat more common in California than across the country?
I think it's fair to say that they are. It depends a little bit on the type of cooperative, but with worker cooperatives, for example, we have probably about 1 of every 6 worker cooperatives in the country are in California.
And how often do those start is the question. I mean, do they tend to start as private businesses? Do they begin life as co-ops? How do those tend to work?
There are several ways that worker cooperatives can come into existence. Many start as cooperatives, and some of the iconic co-ops that Californians may be familiar with, like the Arizmendi Bakeries, of which there are 7 in the San Francisco Bay Area, they started from scratch. They were actually mentored by another longstanding cooperative in their industry, the Cheese Board, which is now part of a network with the Arizmendi Bakeries. So there are many, many co-ops that start by people who are energized about the business they want to go in and about working together in a cooperative format. What Project Equity specializes in is transitioning companies that have been in existence for 30, 40 years, you know, or 10 or 20, but longstanding businesses that are successful, but in some cases might not be able to continue when their owners retire. And right now in California, we're experiencing what the whole country is experiencing, a phenomenon that we call the silver tsunami, where baby boomer business owners are retiring at the rate of 10,000 per day, and many of them own businesses. It was a very entrepreneurial generation. And of course, if they still own their businesses decades after starting it, it means that those are really good businesses in most cases. But in many cases, they may not continue on after the owner's retirement. In California, almost 4 million workers work for businesses that I would qualify as, you know, potentially owned by baby boomers and at risk of succession. So we've been reaching out to owners like that across the country with a strong emphasis in our home state of California. And we have transitioned many companies to worker cooperatives. I'll just give one quick example. There's a 100-year-old business in Oakland that's in logistics and shipping and warehousing. And it's a third-generation family business. The last owner, who just sold it to his employees, just completed that process a couple of months ago. He didn't have children, and he was not interested in selling his company to a competitor. So it's possible that business would have been lost to the city of Oakland, and 40 jobs would have been lost if we hadn't been able to make it a cooperative. And it's going to thrive into the future for generations to come.
So do you find that owners are often aware of the option for co-op, or does it take some education for them to realize this is among their choices? And as you point out, a lot of opportunity with the silver tsunami, with so many business owners looking to get out.
It takes a lot of education, Jeffrey, which is why a big part of what Project Equity does is what I'm doing with you right now. We get out there, we tell the public about it, we do PR and marketing, we do a lot of data studies to generate understanding of the risk of losing businesses, just like the stats that I just shared with you for California. And of course, with COVID, we have additional challenges, so the need is even greater. And we engage with all kinds of stakeholders who interact with businesses to help reach them any way we can.
We are talking to Hillary Abel, the co-founder and chief policy and impact officer at Project Equity, based in Oakland, a national group looking to get people into co-ops. And co-ops are the subject of a recent report put together by Project Equity, the California Center for Cooperative Development, and the Sustainable Economies Law Center to look at the landscape of worker housing and childcare co-ops in California. You can join us on the exchange as we talk about co-ops and their benefits. Maybe you have some stories to share about being part of such a co-op. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Just on a real fundamental level, Hillary, I mean, the individual on one hand, the good of the group on the other, there's a lot of talk about this lately, heightened further by the pandemic. Is the tide running somewhat against people doing things together, the very point of co-ops?
I actually feel the opposite, Jeffrey. I think that our broader culture does create some psychological barriers, and in some ways there are technical barriers for cooperatives that we would like to fix through legislation and other means. But generally speaking, as I mentioned, I've been doing this work for almost 20 years, based in California, primarily working in California personally. And what I found is that the interest in cooperatives has grown dramatically. And in fact, the response to this report, we're hosting a webinar tomorrow, and we've got more than 200 people registered. What we're finding is that folks are hungry for this information, and I think there's more interest in being part of cooperatives, working for cooperatives, potentially even living in cooperatives, than right now we're able to supply. So there's a real need to build cooperative development capacity. You know, organizations like the California Center for Co-op Development and Project Equity do help cooperatives either get started or transition. But I think that if people knew more about this option, and if the practical ways to make it happen and the assistance were there, we would have a lot more of them than we do now.
So does the report that Project Equity and the California Center for Co-op Development and Sustainable Economies Law Center put together, is this a chance to seize the moment in a sense?
It absolutely is. We really wanted to paint the picture of what it looks like in a large state that has a big influence in our country and where we can grow this movement a lot more. And we do paint the way towards recommendations of ways that policymakers, philanthropy, the report was funded by the James Irvine Foundation, actually, which was interested in learning more about these types of cooperatives, and capital providers, you know, these key stakeholders who can do a lot to foster the growth of cooperatives. We wanted them to understand what the model is, and we put out clear recommendations for what they can do.
So, again, we're looking at three areas here: worker co-ops, housing co-ops, childcare co-ops. Let's come back to business for a second. Is there a best kind of business that's well-positioned to become a co-op?
That's a wonderful question, and one we have learned a lot about in the last 5 years that we've been transitioning companies. The most important thing is that it be a solid, stable business that is generating profit, and that can be a good business for the workers to own. So we do this work because we want to promote economic security, quality jobs, and wealth-building opportunities for low- and middle-wage workers. And so, of course, if you have a company that's not generating any wealth, or that is unstable, or in an industry that maybe is failing or is in trouble, that's a harder company to transition. And what we focus on is companies that have at least 10 years of a track record and at least 3 to 5 years of profit. You know, COVID notwithstanding, we adjust for that when we do our feasibility analyses working with the company. So, stable company that the workers really want to own. And in general, selling business owners can find a competitive price through an employee ownership transition, if that is the case. And of course, the interest of employees is important, and the capacity building there for the employees who will become employee owners is important. One other factor that's really key is management capacity, because often in small businesses, you have an owner, if they've run the company for decades, they are probably the general manager and the chief cook and bottle washer. So you have a lot of talent and experience in the workforce that has been there for a long time, but you may lose a lot of the management functions when the owner leaves. So we'd love to see a company that has a strong existing management team or is all on the same page about how to replace those management functions if the owner exits the business.
I can almost hear the groans here, though, from workers, you know, faced with the knowledge that their owner wants to get out and they're being offered the chance to go co-op, in the sense that they're worried about things like having to hire lawyers and all that stuff. How complicated is this?
Well, it's not a simple process, but it's no more complicated, in my view, than other ways of selling the business. I mean, certainly it has dimensions that wouldn't be there if the owner sold to a third-party buyer. But, for example, selling through a business broker can often take 1 to 2 years, and that's about the amount of time it takes when an organization like Project Equity shepherds a company through the process. So what we do say is, you know, don't try this at home, to use an old phrase, but only in the sense of, you know, do get professional support that knows how to walk companies through this process and how to facilitate a transition team that would include the selling owner and employees who are going to be part of the leadership or the board, or at least the, you know, have a role in the company moving forward. And we facilitate their process of, you know, making some of the decisions they need to make about how to structure their cooperative and making sure that any gaps in capacity are filled.
How much are the traditional helpers aligned with co-ops? I mean, do small business development centers, for example, have much experience with co-op setting up?
SBDCs are a key constituency here, so I'm glad you brought them up. In fact, we have had a great partnership with North Coast SBDC in Humboldt County, and their director, Layla Roberts, who has been a visionary SBDC director and worked with Project Equity to bring education around worker ownership transitions, to help build capacity locally among other nonprofits and service providers interested in the space, and to be able to either link to or directly provide some of the services that would help a local business along the way. There's actually something called the Main Street Employee Ownership Act that became law in 2018, and it mandates the Small Business Administration to increase its lending to employee-owned companies, and it also mandates SBDCs to do education about succession planning for business owners and to include employee ownership and worker cooperatives in that education. Unfortunately, SBDCs like the North Coast SBDC and the San Francisco SBDC are among a small number of SBDCs nationally who have really taken it upon themselves to bring this act to life. And one of the things we and others are hoping to do in the coming years is have those examples shine across the SBDC networks and have many more SBDCs step into this space and ideally get the SBA to provide some actual funding for this mandate.
We are talking to Hillary Abel, the co-founder of Project Equity and also the Chief Policy and Impact Officer there, Project Equity, about setting up co-ops, and that is the topic here on The Exchange. Project Equity, the California Center for Co-op Development and the Sustainable Economies Law Center, recently looked at California's cooperatives in terms of worker cooperatives, housing cooperatives, and childcare cooperatives. You can join the conversation on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Stephen and Eugene wrote in to say that Eugene has a long history of worker co-ops and not many are still around. However, Think Electric is turning 20 years old this year and currently has an open call out to any electricians interested in joining. As they say, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. That's thinkelectric.org. Thanks for that, Stephen and Eugene. Do the working situations for workers, I mean, other than having to take a potential management role, are they about the same in co-ops as they are under sole proprietorships, or do things change a bit in worker conditions?
They can change when a company becomes a worker cooperative, but they can also stay the same, with the exception of having the right to run for the board of directors, elect the board, and have a key voice and decision-making role on a small number of major decisions. You know, some cooperatives will operate as collectives and have more of democratic management, if you will. But many others will have more traditional-looking management, but highly participatory. So you can keep the management structures. If they're working well for a business, they can carry over into a cooperative. But what definitely changes is that the company is owned by the worker owners, and that the worker owners serve on, some of them get elected to, and they elect the board of directors.
Another reminder here from Vicki in Ashland, who reminds us about Bob's Red Mill in Milwaukee, Oregon, which also went to a co-op from being a sole proprietorship. We have not that much time left to get into housing and childcare, and I want to talk about the housing co-ops, because obviously in California there's a screaming need for something to slow down the hike in home prices and rents. Does this have much effect in that area?
It does. There are some 200 housing cooperatives in California. And some of them have been there for as long as, 50 or 100 years. What we need is more of them. And we see a growing interest and a powerful social impact coming from manufactured home parks that are transitioning to resident-owned communities. And California Center for Co-op Development is an affiliate of a national organization that has been doing this for decades with a lot of success. And right now, manufactured home parks are across the nation are subject to investor purchases and private equity purchases. There's a lot of them changing hands. And when that happens, rents are increasing dramatically. So that's a really exciting way that affordable housing can be made permanent through a cooperative model. And that's starting to happen more in California.
So does it tend to happen then with existing places, or are there housing co-ops that start essentially on bare ground?
Yes, it can happen either way. And we would love to see affordable housing developers and the government structures that fund and support affordable housing development take another look at housing cooperatives, limited equity housing cooperatives. There is a growing movement around community land trusts, and limited equity housing cooperatives combine really well with a land trust ownership model to create truly affordable housing. And you can transition existing small family homes, multiple ones into one single cooperative, or larger buildings. There's a huge need and a real proven model. And Jeffrey, that's one thing I'd like to say that we learned in this report, and we're really able to document, that cooperatives are a well-proven model in each of these sectors: jobs, businesses, housing, and childcare. And yet they're underutilized. So that's really the main message of the report. And we see them as a potential solution to the crises in jobs, housing, and childcare.
Well, particularly the limited equity housing cooperative, the LEHC you mentioned, is identified as underutilized in the report. What would it take to get them utilized more?
It's a couple of things. Like with all cooperatives, first and foremost, understanding, demystifying some of the myths that people have about cooperatives, and education of those who could really help accelerate this. But there are also some challenges in the legal structure. Or legal regulations affecting housing cooperatives. And the primary one is that the incentives for affordable housing cooperatives the incentives for affordable housing development, which is largely done by nonprofit organizations, are based around certain tax incentives for which LEHCs, housing cooperatives, are not eligible. My co-author, Kim Koontz, is a real expert in this area, and we see a real opportunity to establish a level playing field and get cooperatives the same benefits that other kinds of affordable housing or small business support or whatever it might be that other models have. And cooperatives really deserve it.
Is there something to that effect already introduced in this legislature in California?
No, I don't think there is. And it's something that I believe the California Center for Cooperative Development is very interested in working on.
All right, so let's move on to, we're talking again to Hillary Abel, the co-founder of Project Equity, Chief Policy and Impact Officer, about co-ops in California. And final category here is childcare co-ops, and there are so many forms of childcare. Do the co-ops then have many approaches?
They do. There are two primary ones that the report recommends. One is that I was surprised to learn personally that there are more than 200 childcare centers, brick-and-mortar physical locations where kids are receiving care day-to-day, that are cooperatives in California. The oldest one is at Stanford University, and it's more than 100 years old, extremely successful. And the other model, Jeffrey, is what we would call a family child care home cooperative, where you would have multiple small businesses, these individual family child care homes, small businesses owned by that homeowner usually, that come together in a cooperative. So sort of like an Ace Hardware. They are independently owned businesses that share various back office benefits, marketing benefits, training programs that they can do together. So a cooperative of small home child care providers or a cooperative child care center that is controlled by the parent consumers and also by the workers is a great model. We would like to see more multi-stakeholder child care centers where both the parents and the workers are members of that cooperative and can really steward the quality of care and the sustainability of that child care center.
One of the issues the report points to and is acknowledged in lots of other reports is the low pay for people who provide child care. Is that addressed at all in cooperatives?
It is. My understanding is that in all kinds of cooperatives that are consumer cooperatives, like most child care cooperatives, and we see this across grocery cooperatives as well, that the pay is actually better for the workers. And that's not because of any specific mandate. It's just because the cooperatives tend to want to do the right thing, and they're really focused on people. So they value the people that work for them. And as you know, in all care sectors, whether it's long-term care for folks with disabilities or folks who are later on in their lives, or child care, children at the beginning of their lives, we have a major crisis, and the need for both of those things is only growing. So cooperatives really should be a big part of the solutions that are being considered here.
So Hillary, we're down to our last 45 seconds or so. For the people thinking that cooperatives sound great for workers, for housing, for child care, but they're concerned about complexity, what's the sales pitch here? How to get people who are thinking about it a little more convinced?
The main thing is to understand that the benefits are great and the complexities that are there are completely solvable, and that there's a broad network of organizations with decades of experience in cooperative development. So there may be one in your community. You know, there are cooperative development centers serving Oregon as well as California and the whole, you know, Northwest. And yes, learn more. And if you want to learn more about our report, it talks a lot about cooperative development in all of these sectors in California, mm-hmm. but those lessons can be applied anywhere. So visit our website at project-equity.org/CA.
Okay. Hillary Abel, co-founder of Project Equity, thank you so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Jeffrey.